Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Friday, March the 1st, 60th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Eureka City Manager Bill Panos. Hey, guy. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you.
You're wearing a sweater. I thought that city managers always wore short sleeve, open collar because the weather was always so perfect.
Well, first, the weather is perfect here. I'm wearing a sweater because it's a little cold.
So it's not quite perfect.
Okay. I like it. But I like it cold.
Well, so do I. But I hate sweaters. So I just am curious if you're a sweater guy.
I'm a sweater guy on Fridays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A suit guy.
Camo guy on Tuesdays for city council.
A suit guy most of the rest of the week. Not a camo guy.
Fair enough. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on around the city of Eureka and also with some of the discussions going on with what is going to be the impact, or is there an impact of what's going on or what isn't going on in Washington, D.C.? We'll get Bill's take on that as well when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Panos. But before we do, our quote this afternoon actually is a Zen aphorism.
Wow.
Are you ready?
Okay. Hit me.
When you reach the top, keep climbing.
It's very deep.
Isn't it? Well, kind of thin there at that point. If you're deep, then you go off the cliff. What?
Nothing.
What are you looking at?
Nothing.
Top of my head. Opens up a whole different set of questions and answers, doesn't it?
I'll stick with deep.
Yeah. Oh, geez. So what are you seeing around town these days? What sense do you have driving around Eureka? You guys have been here a little bit, so you have a better idea. The various districts and whatnot. What do you see in Eureka?
I was speaking earlier this week to a number of community groups, and I reflected on this question. It's interesting that you asked. The idea of Eureka as having the fundamentals. They have all of the fundamentals for this community to continue and to be really whatever it wants to be. I mean, you've got the bay, you have the environment, you have the history, the legacy. There are a lot of motivated people who care about this community. There are a lot of positives and a lot of fundamentals here that I think if we plan and take the proper advantage of, the community can be whatever it really wants to be. And I'm excited by that. It's something that I'm starting to discover now after being here a couple of months. And really, at this point, learning. It's funny, I think I'm on schedule because I'm now learning what I don't know. You know, and I'm starting to see all of the things that I don't know. But one of the things that's starting to become clear is that the fundamentals here in Eureka are great.
So when you say fundamental, if we can get a little bit, let's say we get about the about 1,000 feet up in the air instead of this 100,000 foot level. Street, sewer, water, power, I guess cops, fire, waterfront. Is that the kind of stuff you're seeing that says, yeah, the fundamentals are here?
Yeah, from a municipal point of view, the infrastructure is here. We have an amazing water supply. Communities, and most of our water comes from the Mad River. All of our water comes from the Mad River, and it's a clean water supply that many of the communities here have used for years. But we have a great water supply, and a lot of communities, it's a very big problem for them. We have that fundamental. We have a great team that runs our wastewater treatment plant, and they're improving it all of the time. And we have great infrastructure here. Obviously, infrastructure that needs, always needs to be maintained, always needs to be improved. And we need to keep working on that. But the basics are here. And so coming down to 1,000 feet, it is things like water supply, a really strong commitment on the part of the citizens to support infrastructure. We have a good park system. We have a good school system, albeit it needs to always be maintained and improved. We have the basic fundamentals here that that could really lead to whatever we want it to be, a community, whatever community we want it to be. And so that's sort of what I mean by the fundamentals.
The parks. And let's keep Sequoia Park kind of separate.
Sure.
It's more like the zoo extended. And the gardens are kind of like the zoo extended. I mean, that's kind of one compound. But the grass parks that are around town, Ross, Carson Park, some of those. When you look at those, and I know it's a weird word to say, but are they being maximized? Are they doing what they should be doing? Are they doing what you think that they ought to be doing? When you see those parks, and most of us see a bent basketball hoop, maybe a couple of swings or toys for the kids to play on, and a lot of grass. Is that a park? Is that doing what other communities do to really use those as the hubs of those neighborhoods? Because I see a lot of these as kind of drive-by lawns that somehow the house got knocked down or somebody stole the house, and that's pretty much all that there is that's there. How do you see them?
I see parks not as simply green spaces of grass, but, you know, we have a municipal golf course that's an amazing recreation resource that is in and of itself a park. We have an amazing waterfront that people use for recreation and for relaxing, as you would a park, for picnics, those kinds of things, for family interaction on a regular basis. That is very much what open space parks, those things are all about. We have some open space, and in fact, there's some discussion about some additional open space in the McKay Tract and some other things. So I think it's not just, oh, we have great baseball fields and soccer fields, and all of those kinds of areas are used by various groups all of the time. We have an amazing recreation team in the city that engages people in these facilities. And so I don't see it as limiting as just grass that you drive by. It's a place where people come together. It's a place where families come together. And it's an important fundamental of our community.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Bill Panos.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Panos. Bill, some of the different challenges I think that the city, any city has, is that infrastructure you were alluding to. But now there are a couple of things that are a little bit bizarre-est with Eureka that most cities don't have. The Wharfinger. Okay, that's something that most cities don't have. Most cities don't have a small dock okay? And most cities don't have a zoo. So you got those three things that are part of the city infrastructure, certainly unique. I don't think you make anything on any of them. Accurate? I mean, do you break even on any of those three?
I don't know what you mean by break even. What
we do, cost versus expense.
Yeah.
Or revenue, rather.
Yeah, we there are, I don't know the answer to that question on each one of those properties that you talked about. But as you know, our primary mission is to provide facilities and services for our residents to use and for the community to use. And they certainly use those facilities in a very significant way. And in particular, the Wharfinger and the Marina are used really well. And, you know, the zoo is an amazing legacy asset for this region. The oldest zoo in California. And so we have, again, we have these very unique, as you point out, very unique assets for our community. And we hope to just keep enhancing those.
Can we afford them?
You know, I think that, again, that question for someone like me is a fiscal question. And then there's the policy implications with the council takes on. And so we evaluate that. And I think I've said before on this show that we look pretty good. I mean, we're not a rich community, but we're not a poor community either in terms of city finances and municipal finances.
Well,
and
let me rephrase it then. Can we continue to afford them?
I think that as the community, it's really up to the community and it's up to the city council. The community is going to put and ask the city council to put their emphasis in places that they want and to de-emphasize things that they do not. And the city government is going to be responsive to the council and to the citizens in that regard. And so it's up to the citizens to decide what they can afford or not and what they want.
Somebody gave you the background about the zoo, didn't they? Some of the past decisions that weren't necessarily embraced by this community. Does the bear mean anything to you? Oh, okay. I got the smile. See, that the one year I've not been here in the 50 whatever was that year when I was in Nebraska, and I still don't get it. And people are still passionate about what happened, and it was in 82 what happened with how that whole thing played out. It's funny to me, weird, not ha-ha, how passionate people will get about one slice, one component, one little part of their city, and by golly, that's the thing. The other stuff, blow it up, burn it down, doesn't matter. But my one thing, by golly, we have to protect that one to the nth degree. Do you sense that is a positive? Or is that something that makes decision making more challenging?
No, I love it. I think that people should engage in their community. People should act on their passion. And if they feel strongly about one issue, let us know. Let city government know. Let the council know. We will listen to that, and we will do what we can to deal with those things. And yes, if somebody is focused on one issue, that's great, because we have so many citizens that are so active in our community, either by just talking with us or volunteering or engaging with us in a variety of different circumstances, that it makes for better city government. So I would encourage any citizen who is focused on any one issue or many issues to come and speak with us. We're open for business.
I'm thinking how many different communities would like to exchange one of those features and would be willing to trade things that we probably don't have that we would love to have here.
Communities spend billions of dollars trying to recreate what we have in Humboldt Bay. Just that alone.
So would that be the water part?
Yeah, and the protected harbor and the deep water ship channel and all of that.
So what sense? And I know
we have an amazing resource there.
You're still newbie. You probably will be until you're dead. But how do you maximize a resource that has gone through changes such as the Bayfront has over the various generations, that has become a rallying point for different perspectives? Mm-hmm. Is that an easy system? Is that an easy process to do?
No, but things change, and it's important to recognize and listen to all of those that have a stake in things like Humboldt Bay, and to be cognizant of and to be receptive to everyone's position and opinion. The Bay is a diverse resource with diverse solutions. And I think that we're approaching that. The council approaches it. City Council approaches it in that way. And so we are in tune with the diversity of the Bay. And the Bay is just an amazing resource for our community.
Even the slough at this end?
Sure.
Okay. It just kind of looks ugly to me, but that's okay. KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Bill Panos.
This is Fred Van Vleck, Eureka City Schools Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes and the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Panos. Bill, as you look at some of the different challenges that are out there, I guess most folks before you came to town said, well, the first big determination here of the new city manager is going to be the police. Are we going to combine dispatch? Are we going to combine functionalities? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? How long is the police chief going to stay the police chief? Hire from within, hire from outside. What are we going to do? Negotiations, size, challenges, infrastructure, all that kind of stuff. Because I think, and there's probably a couple communities out there that don't, cops and fire probably are right up there with streets is going 1-2 as things that people expect, demand, want from their city or county.
Right.
High focus. And a lot of people like these guys too. So there's a personal and there's an emotional, there's a logical, there's all this stuff wrapped up. When I think the first show you said that you were very, very pleased and comfortable with the department as it is. Dandy. But you still got this thing called, is Merle going to stay? Is Merle going to retire? Is Merle going to, what's Merle going to do? And, comma, what's Bill and the city council going to do after Merle does whatever Merle does? Is there any, you guys have any timeline on that? Or is he going to be around for another 85 years?
Well, as you know, the one of the first things the council's asked me to do is to take a look at the police chief recruitment. And so I've been doing that over the last couple of months. I've met with not only the police officers, but folks in the detective bureau and sergeants, middle level management, as well as our dispatchers and law enforcement folks from around the region. And also community groups, and of course the council. We've talked extensively about this, and we've come to a determination that we want to do a national recruitment for a new police chief. And so that's what we're going to be doing, and we're going to be hiring a national recruiter, someone that's familiar with our area that has had a track record here, and we'll be doing that immediately, and it'll take about 4 months. Between now and the end of June, we'll be going through a process. Some more details will be coming out over the next couple of weeks. And by July 1, we hope to have a new police chief in place. And Merle can retire as he intended to do before.
So that everything's okay with Merle?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to ask Merle's, him on Monday when he's in anyway.
So ask him when he's in. Merle is amazing.
Yeah, it's – well, and I think that that's speaks to our area a little bit. Quality of individual, but really been around a long time. So that institutional knowledge or just not having to think and just do, that I would think is going to be the toughest thing to replace.
Yeah. I mean, he's a wealth of knowledge. A lot of the officers and a lot of the leadership have been fortunate enough to have him as their mentor and teacher. And so he's been very good in that regard. He's been a great leader. Our recruitment here is really looking to do a couple of things. One, to enhance the candidate pool so that we, you know, the community deserves the best police force that that we can possibly give it. And the officers deserve to have, and the police department, the best leader that we can possibly find. And so we are going to search across the nation to find that next leader. The other thing that this brings, this process brings, is really
transparent. You're not reading notes, are you?
I have a couple of notes.
Okay.
I
will take that phone and turn it upside down if you're reading notes.
and I'm just making sure I say everything. So the other is transparency. You know, transparency with the public, and to ensure that we have the most transparent process possible as we go through the process of hiring this very important position.
All right,
I'll turn my phone over.
Now you know I'm going to have to go off. Oh, now you're... He answered his 3 points, and now he's willing to let me ask some other questions.
You can ask whatever you want.
What makes a good police chief? What are you looking for?
You know, I've learned each community, it's a slightly different answer. However, what I have learned from this community and from the conversations that I've had so far is that they have a couple of characteristics. One is that they're a great practitioner of policing, that they understand the culture, they understand the officers, the technology, the advanced thinking that's going on in police services now, and somebody that is a good practitioner that can be flexible, that can be dealing with different communities and different parts of different communities, someone that's a good practitioner. The second is that they are a great communicator and public relations person, so that they can connect the department to the community. And those two characteristics, the ability to connect the department to the community in a positive way, in a way which extends their reach, is a very important characteristic. And then this characteristics of a practitioner.
Be a good cop.
Yeah.
Are they easy to find?
No, they're not.
Because it seems pretty basic. Job description: good cop, good communicator. Wouldn't think it'd be tough to find.
It's very difficult to find good fits. The idea that you can articulate what we want as a community to the world, to say this is the kind of police chief that we want, or to the nation, this is the kind of police chief we want, is only half the formula. The other half of the formula is the individuals themselves. They have to be in the right place in their career and in their family life to be the correct fit for this community. And it's both sides of that equation. It's the second side that's actually the most difficult.
Somebody who's looking for career advancement, or somebody who's looking to show up and pull the wheels off their car and they're staying here for the rest of their career?
A little bit of both. But, you know, what I'm getting from this community is probably more the latter. Somebody that is willing to stay here for a while, to see it through, and to be a part of this community, an integral part of this community. That's what the council has asked people like myself to do. That's what this kind of police chief, the kind of police chief that they're looking for, is one which has those types of characteristics to stay here a while.
KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Bill Panos.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Panos. Bill, this stuff that's going on, I guess stuff is probably as clean a term as I can think of at this point, in Washington, flowing downhill to Sacramento, flowing downhill to us, and we all know what typically flows downhill. What's the word, sequester?
Sequester.
Yeah, okay. When you're trying to figure out who to believe, who to trust, who's accurate, who's not, how do you pull out and extract the politics? How do you figure out, okay, is the governor really full of hot air here, or is he positioning, trying to placate people up the ladder or up the food chain so that we get our brownies or we don't? How do you separate all this stuff out as it's fluid and as things are still in motion?
So we prepare for the worst, hope for the best, and we wait for it to come to us. We don't try and get in front of it and try and solve problems that we don't have yet, but we're prepared. And so our community, as I've said before, is we're not a rich community. We're not a poor community. We're sort of in that sort of middle zone, and we will look at the effects of the sequester as they start moving through. We won't see those effects for a few months. And as they're approaching us, we will have an early understanding of how they will, if they will, and how they will. And then we'll take the appropriate action.
It sounds like you're doing budgets.
We are. We are, actually. Next week, actually. And we've been working on this with my finance director, myself, and some of the other staff. We've actually been working since I started. The very first meeting I had was a budget meeting. But now we're past mid-year, and we're getting into the beginnings of the budget process. And we'll be working on that over the next few months, finishing at the end of June.
So what approach are you taking with this? A structural, and then start hanging meat on the bones and build it out that way, kind of a zero-based budget? Or is it a rollover from where we are and looking to either cut back if needed or use today as a reference? How are you doing that in light of this environment that's going on?
It varies from organization to organization and even varies a little bit from year to year. We get a lot of our policy direction from the council. We're actually doing a strategic planning exercise here with the council in the beginning of April. And that actually will give us the roadmap by which we will budget for 13-14. And we use a lot of as much analysis as we can, trending analysis as we can from last year and the next year. So, you know, it varies from year to year. It varies from community to community. This one, I'm not completely sure how they've done it throughout all of the years of the city's existence. But recently they've had a really good process, and we're going to continue to use that process, and the council will be at the front of it.
You know the term filibuster, right?
Yes.
I just had a great question. You sucked up all the time and we're gone.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I bet you are. I'll ask you afterwards. We've been talking shop this afternoon with Bill Panos. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thank you.
Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you want. See you tomorrow morning.